We're talking about NEST, which is the special national bomb squad, so to speak. It's the secret nuclear emergency support team. When you say secret, it doesn't mean that people don't know that it exists. They just don't know much about it. Because up until this book, Defusing Armageddon, this agency has been kept fairly super secret, only occasionally granting information. And in this case, Jeffrey Richardson has definitely been putting together the comprehensive definitive book that has been available on NEST, what they have done, what they are capable of doing, what they are up against. We'll get to that, plus your questions next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So we'll get to your questions coming up in just a second for Jeffrey Richardson. Again, we're talking about America's secret nuclear bomb squad. How many people are involved with NEST? Any numbers? Jeffrey?
Yes.
How many people are actually involved? What's what's a roster looking like these days for NEST, and are they hiring?
High hundreds, somewhere between, I'd say, 600 and 800 or so people. And, of course, only a small fraction of those would actually go out on any particular deployment. And certainly, as people leave, retire, they would be replaced by new blood. And again, they look from to get people not directly out of a university or someplace or an academic department or school, but from the labs, people who are already there doing other things. Same with the contractors.
Been a few movies where a bomb has been, whether it's a former nuclear weapon or just a dirty bomb, was brought in via some big, you know, tanker, right, on top of a shipment of something else and shoved into a railroad car or whatever. And that has been the sort of the ongoing worry that, you know, you've got all of these giant boxcars coming into the United States every day on top of tankers and these big giant ships. What can NEST do? I mean, what have they tried to do to determine whether or not anything's being shipped in through our ports?
Well, there's one incident where they did deploy, actually, I guess two incidents. One was a case of a ship called the Palermo Senator, which was stopped outside of New York. And originally, the people who were inspecting it, which wasn't NEST, heard stuff going on, and they thought there might be stowaways. And then there appeared to be some radiation involved, so NEST was called in along with some Navy people, and they did a survey of the ship and determined that nothing, there was no threat, and the ship was then allowed to pass. There was an incident also a couple of years ago where a radiation sensor in the port of Colombo, Sri Lanka, detected something, and the ships eventually went out to sea, and NEST people were sent both to Asia and Europe to examine all the ships that could have been the ship that set off the sensor. And they eventually found that there was nothing, that there was no problem there either, and those ships were then allowed to proceed. But the NEST is really only one part of this whole sort of complex of agencies and departments that seek to prevent the nuclear bomb in a container from getting in. That function is part customs, is part Department of Homeland Security, the establishment of portals and radiation monitors that these things go through after they come off a ship. And it's people have noted a daunting problem because, as you can imagine, the number of containers and crates and all this stuff coming into the United States from all the ports is simply immense. You certainly can't inspect every one of them. So you try to have a system where you could hopefully detect radiation that might be emanating from them, but that's not per se a NEST function. NEST gets called in if somebody detects something that looks strange or might involve a bomb.
If it moves up to the next level of some sort, NEST would get involved.
Right.
Let's get a couple of people involved here. East of the Rockies, Kay is in Knoxville on Coast to Coast AM. for Jeffrey Richelson, author of Diffusing Armageddon, Inside Nest, America's Secret Nuclear Bomb Squad. Kay?
Good evening, Mr. Richardson.
Good evening.
I took a nap just so I could listen to you and Ian. Ian, hi there. It's Kay. Remember me?
Glad to have you, Kay.
9 degrees in Big Orange Country, not wind chill.
Well, you know,
9 degrees.
I understand that's cold for Tennessee, but here, just let me give you a quick thought. I came back from Mexico on Tuesday. It was 86. It was 86 when I left. It was negative 13 when I showed up here. That's a 99-degree swing in one flight. So,
see how God presents you with these beautiful gifts.
Yes, I think so.
And but my question to your author, and I am anxious to read your book, sir. I'm sure it's going to be fascinating. My background is a retired lieutenant colonel, deceased's wife. My father was a PhD nuclear engineer and a very strong proponent of nuclear energy. He was with FPNL and opened several plants. Of course, he's deceased. I'm living in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I know what General Eisenhower did with the interstate system. Okay? Do I need to leave Tennessee shortly? I know where ORNL is in Los Alamos and Lawrence Livermore. I have a button that's so old it says JPL is out of this world. Back in my top secret IBM hotel days. So that's my question.
Okay. Is there an area of the country that is that one needs to be worried about that is more susceptible that, as far as you can tell, Nest is patrolling or looking to stop people from accessing? Interesting.
The question your caller raises really refers to, in a way, security in nuclear areas where somebody might fly a plane into it or fire a missile if they could get one
right
into a target and spread radiation there. And certainly there's, I suppose, always some risk, but I haven't certainly come across anything that indicates that's something anybody considers at all likely. For other people, if you live in a major metropolitan area, that's more of a target than a small area. And so, you know, when Nest goes out on precautionary deployments, it's going to be in Los Angeles or New York or Miami, and it's not necessarily going to be in some small town. So, you know, there's always those two risks. And I guess if you move to a small enough place, you'll minimize the risk. But I guess you're giving up other things then.
Right. But in this case, then, it's not a Nest concern about somebody. That would be more in the FBI's.
FBI, Nuclear Regulatory Commission, other organizations.
Right. West of the Rockies, Harry on Coast to Coast AM for Jeffrey Richelson. Harry?
Yeah. Thank you, Jeffrey. And thank you, Ian, of course. Jeffrey, are you familiar with TIPS, the Terrorism Intervention Prevention System?
Yeah, I've heard of it, certainly.
I'm wondering how much further Americans are going to have to take their freedoms down to pretty much no freedoms whatsoever with that particular system. And have you found out how many exact cities they're actively participating with the TIPS program? Because it seems to me the TIPS program actually is participating in this Nest part of what I would call the this TIPS program. If you look up here in a local university, a metalloprotein interest group, these documents are pretty much rephrasing and re-categorizing us Americans as road networks, as street names, and as terrorist people. So the active participation in this particular town is actually, I believe, active already since as of 2002. These documents I have are from 2007 and 2008.
All right. Well, let's give Jeffrey a chance to respond to that. Jeffrey?
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know that much about the TIPS program to probably answer the question very well. In terms of Nest, they would get their contact would be, yeah, largely the in terms of pursuing an investigation, either information or threats that come in directly to one part of the government to the other, or from the FBI or an intelligence agency. I don't know that local organizations would necessarily be feeding them any sort of information. They just have to go out when they have some real threat or on a precautionary deployment, and they're not looking at specific individuals so much as they're looking at areas where there might be some sort of a device.
And yet, didn't you find, and again, I'm sort of pulling on some parts I read of the book a while ago, but they were doing surveillance of Muslim groups? Right, Muslim sites. Talk about that.
After 9/11, there was a program in a number of cities where they had vans with detection equipment driving around or parking in the vicinity of Muslim sites, mosques, and so forth, looking for any signs of radiation that something was being assembled. And you know, there was a dispute over what the basis of their other activities was. I mean, the FBI and others claim that this was being done on the basis of some sort of information, what they call the criminal predicate. Although certainly, if it's that extensive, you would expect that at least part of it is based on simply where they think the trouble might occur.
So, long story short, they did they or did they not have actionable intelligence, or did it just seem like they were going on a hunch?
What actionable intelligence they had in these cases isn't known. I mean, nobody has turned up anything in terms of reporting, and certainly no documents have been declassified that would allow you to judge one way or the other.
And so... But that shouldn't be terribly surprising in one sense, because they were operating during the Cold War too. I mean, it's a different environment now when you're investigating terrorism, perhaps, than when you were investigating, say, a set enemy like the Soviets, a declared enemy like the Soviets, because then they probably had a lot more leeway. If something came in that was marked Russian or related to Russia, that was easier for Nest to get involved with.
Well, I guess I would refer to or point to the change that occurred late in the Clinton administration, just in the sense that they created this series of events called designation called the National Special Security Event. And that is, there have been 20 plus of these, and it would include the inauguration. It will include the Super Bowl in a few weeks, where these are felt to be events that might be of particular attractiveness to a terrorist group, where they might really want to do something drastic. And these are the type of events where the Secret Service, the FBI, but also NES will often be out doing this type of precautionary deployment in order to see if something's going on. And that's something they're doing without necessarily any intelligence information, just based on the, you know, attractiveness of the target to a terrorist group.
Right.
And that's sort of related, but not completely, to the Muslim sites, where they were just where it was precautionary and where there was concern that something might be going on, given, you know, the 9/11 and the immediate aftermath.
But that was your point's taken. I mean, one is just sort of a general, no matter who it is, we're going to safeguard these events. And the other was sort of, hey, looks like some Muslims hate us. Let's just troll around and go fishing and see what we find, is what it seems more like in the second case. First time caller line, Pamela is in Ohio for Jeffrey Richelson, the author of a book about Nest, America's super secret government agency operating to prevent nuclear terrorist attacks. Pamela?
Good evening.
Evening.
Hello.
Hi, I'm very interested in this book. I've kind of been waiting for it. Bill Chambers told me about it some time ago. One of the things I would like to add to this is NEST was initially the Nuclear Emergency Search Team. and it was changed to support team. And it has cooperated with other countries over the years. It has, particularly with the United Kingdom and the nuclear supplier group countries. They have had in place some really competent networks with allies to intercept special nuclear materials and create nuclear or safeguards environments that have been very good. A lot of what's happened from the Bush administration was cutting funds for research facilities and academia, things where the new nuclear scientists are coming from. And I am concerned about future human capital and their capabilities in continuing this work.
All right. Well, let's get Jeffrey a chance to respond to that. Jeff?
One, it's certainly interesting, and problem of getting trained people and keeping trained people is something that's been a problem not only with NEST but a lot of national security agencies, the National Security Agency, the National Reconnaissance Office, and so forth. And so it's a sort of a problem across the board.
She seems like, you know, she was talking about this. His book has been coming up for a while. What's been the response to the book since it's come out?
Well, it's not actually in the stores yet. It should be in the stores in the next week or so. I've just heard from a couple of people I've sent advanced copies to, and that's about it. So I guess we'll see in a few weeks.
But nobody from NEST has responded one way or another, saying
they would do that.
They're not going. You're not waiting for them to deny this book or to.
No.
Okay.
No. All right. I heard a favorable comment about my article when I did that several years ago. That came indirectly from somebody in NEST, but I guess maybe. I will hear through the grapevine from some of the labs that I know or some of the people I know what they think of it. But I think it'll take a while for them to get in and read it and think about it.
Michael is in Florida on Coast to Coast AM for Jeffrey Richardson, author of the book Diffusing Armageddon. Michael?
Hello. My question basically is, I know with all the emphasis that has been placed on weapons of mass destruction in the last few years. Does NEST work with or advise or, I guess, work with groups that do either, is there a CESP, a chemical or biological weapons group with their own expertise?
Oh, yeah. That's a good question. Is there an appropriate agency for non-nuclear, but for other things that are that specific?
Well, there are a lot of agencies that deal with that. There is nothing that's really analogous to NEST. People have, in fact, talked about maybe we should have a biological emergency support team or search team. That has never happened. And one difference is that, or one problem that people have pointed out, is that with a biological event or a biological attack, you don't have a source in the same way that you have a nuclear. If a nuclear device is at one particular point, and until it goes off, it's at that one place. A biological event is something that can be spread across a country or across a region. And so you can't necessarily send out a search team to find the perpetrator or the proposed perpetrator.
Right.
And the same thing applies to chemicals also.
We're getting a few more calls coming up for Jeffrey, and then we'll transition into open line calls for the rest of the night. So if you're hanging on for a question for Jeffrey Richardson, author of Diffusing Armageddon, we'll get to your question coming up. And otherwise, we'll start moving into open line calls and say thank you to Jeff coming up in this next half hour on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. All right, so coming up, then we'll transition into open lines for the rest of the night. We'll take a couple of calls left for Jeffrey Richardson, and then we'll move into open lines where you'll take the show. We'll find out, but we'll just wrap up our conversation about NEST, the Nuclear Emergency Support Team. This is a group of sort of anonymous nuclear scientists, physicists, at an academic level and working in the field that can be called together at a moment's notice to help with a nuclear bomb that may have been brought into the country, to keep nuclear weapons from coming into the country, radiological weapons of any sort. And they've been around for a long time, and chances are you've never heard of them. But this book is out. It's called Diffusing Armageddon. It explains everything, and we'll get our last couple of calls coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. With our gratitude for both writing the book and for being our guest tonight, Jeffrey Richardson is hanging on for a few more calls, and then we'll go into open lines. Sam is in Brooklyn on Coast to Coast AM for the book Diffusing Armageddon. Sam?
Yes, good evening, gentlemen. My question for your guest, Ian, is that I read somewhere on the internet that the president-elect Obama will be forming something called a CPF, which is the Civilian Paramilitary Force. I just want to find out if he knows anything about that and what their role will be as far as keeping the country safe.
That is an interesting question. It may be a better open lines question, which we could transition to coming up. But, yeah, I guess we are entering into kind of a new age here with President Obama in just a few days. And this subject has come up about keeping us safe. Any idea how President-elect Obama will, has he spoken about NEST, or has there been any thought how things might change under him as opposed to a Bush administration?
Certainly, he hasn't said anything about it that I'm aware of. I don't know that it'll make much difference in terms of NEST operations. I mean, there's no controversy really in general about interrogations or that type of thing. I suppose that the issue of the Muslim sites might be something that might be treated differently. But then again, that was right after 9/11 as opposed,
right,
opposed to now. He might have some impact in terms of funding of the Department of Energy and the labs. And so there might be some impact that's indirect, but it's not at all clear that will happen, especially given the probably budget restraints that he'll be under, given the economy.
Yeah, interesting. I guess we'll know soon. Let's get to Mike in Arizona, Phoenix, for Jeffrey Richardson, and then just a couple more calls, and we'll go open lines. Go ahead, Mike.
I'd like to know if when it was determined that Al-Qaeda was behind 9/11, and also if this group has been involved in searching for nuclear weapons in Iraq.
Oh, that's a good. I think that's a better. Your second question is a better question. Did they spend any time in Iraq?
Yes. It wasn't necessarily a NEST deployment, but you had NEST personnel in 2003 who were in Iraq. One of the people I write about in the book was helping to look for nuclear weapons. Of course, there wasn't anything there to find, but they were part of the search effort. And they had also proposed back in 91 after the first Gulf War a search effort, but it was considered too extensive to actually implement, or sort of more than was needed. But as I said, they certainly have had people from that organization who have been over there at various times looking for nuclear weapons.
Aaron is in Phoenix also for Jeffrey Richardson, and then we'll probably call it quits. Go ahead, Aaron. You get the last question in.
Hey, how you doing tonight, Ian? And how you doing there, Jeffrey?
Fine.
All right, I just have a quick question. I see the last caller was from Phoenix. It seems that we live next to the biggest nuclear plant in the country here at Palo Verde. And over the past couple of years, there's been really obscure and vague news stories on our local station. And I kind of been looking them up online. And I was, my main question with this was, how involved is NEST? And how is their presence around the nuclear plants in the country? Because, you know, my theory is that they wouldn't need to bring in a bomb necessarily to cause a nuclear disaster.
Sure.
If that's the point. A couple of these incidents that I'm speaking of, one of the engineers that worked at the Palo Verde plant had actually taken software to Iran, where he was a native of, and he got in some hot water and ended up taking a plea deal out on that one. And there's still an unsolved case of how a pipe bomb ended up in one of the employees' trucks that actually works at the plant as well. And this all happened in the past 2 years.
That does sound like it would cross the path of Nest. Jeffrey?
Well, Nest wouldn't really be involved in either of those incidents because that would be something that would be involved the Nuclear Regulatory Commission or the FBI, so forth, because only if they actually spilled nuclear material and Nest was looking for that, then they would be involved, just as in 1979 in Wilmington, North Carolina, somebody, an employee of the GE nuclear plant there, took a couple of gallons of low-enriched uranium out of the plant and then tried to blackmail the plant for money in order to return them, and Nest was called in that situation. But if it's just a pipe bomb or if it's something that doesn't involve the, you know, stealing nuclear material from the plant and they're looking for it, Nest isn't involved unless there was actually an incident and radiation was leaking from the plant, and then like Three Mile Island, Nest and its detection equipment might be used.
So, to be clear, then Nest would be involved if, in fact, Homer Simpson did take, nuclear material out of the power plant like he does in the intro of every Simpsons episode. Nest would be on him in Springfield, theoretically.
Yeah, once somebody alerted them that the stuff was out there, they would be on Homer.
It's right on TV. They have to have seen it on television. I hope Nest has been on the case already. Thank you so much, Jeffrey. Really enjoyed the book, Diffusing Armageddon. Other people I know will both be glad to know that there's an organization out there and also be concerned on the future of Nest and where are they going to get the great minds who are going to help keep this on the cutting edge. So thank you so much. God bless you for your time this morning. And
hope you have
a terrific new year.
Okay, thank you.
Interesting work that he's done. If you link up to Jeffrey Richardson through the website at coasttocoastam.com, you'll see he's done, he loves to work in the intelligence community. He also has a PhD, so I probably should have been calling him Dr. Jeff for the whole night. But that now means that it's time to get to open lines, and let's pick up from Minnie in Augusta, Kentucky on Coast to Coast AM. Minnie?
Hello, Ian.
You get to kick off open lines.
Oh, good. I'd like to kick something. Anyway, wouldn't we all? Anyhow, I want to make this as concise as possible. I am sure that you've covered this territory with your staff. You have to talk about this. I mean, you've got that, I don't have a computer, but you got that anger line, at God line. And stuff.
A website I put up about angry prayers, yes.
Okay. So let me talk fast so that you can get in. I am a good girl. I think you can tell from my voice. I'm a kind girl. I am a kind person. Right now, I am having a grave crisis of faith. That doesn't cover it. Now, okay, when I speak to God, I tell him every time I say I know I'm talking for 1 million people, to say the least. Here's the drill. I wish that you could get someone on your show, maybe it's just too much, maybe it's just a little too heated, I don't know, but some really kind, wonderful man who can just speak, hopefully in the Judeo-Christian. I mean, right now I don't need the Dalai Lama. I like him. But I need somebody in my own faith base who could answer some tough, tough questions about God. And now, I used to do comedy. I know you said you did. And you'll understand this. I'm not being irreverent, so don't anybody get mad at me. But it's pretty much like if I try to pray to him. He's very distant, and I'll say, big boy, are you out to lunch with a Monsignor having fine wine? I cannot find you. Okay? But you know what I'm saying.
It sounds like you're having a crisis of various types.
And anxious. I don't hate God, but boy, you know, if he got nose to nose with me, I would hope to sneeze.
Yeah. Well,
you get it.
I totally get it. And here's, of course, this is what I would recommend to you. Getting a guest is one thing, and you know, there are all sorts of potential guests, I guess, out there that we could bring in.
Yeah.
But it comes right down to it. It sounds like you could use some sort of, you know, over a cup of coffee kind of FaceTime with somebody that could hear you out.
Can I suggest a person that you might enjoy reading? And just
sure.
I'll guess his name, and I got to let you go because you got other callers, okay?
Go ahead. Who would you recommend?
This fellow, I read him in the local Catholic Weekly Messenger. He's an Obrate priest. Now, you had the Obrate Wingate on, Father Wingate.
Right, okay.
This guy's nothing like Wingate. He's down in Texas, and he is the type of person, he's just got a great mind and heart. His name is Father Rollheiser. It's a funny name. You can remember it, Rollheiser.
Okay.
And he's down in Texas, and I just think if you ever read some of his stuff, you might think, hey, I'd like to get him on as a guest. I think he would be helpful.
I have a homework assignment then for Sunday, too, and then I'll be ready for that. In fact, I'm preaching in the morning. So after I get the sermon out of the way, I'll be happy to take a look and see whether he might make a good guest on Coast to Coast. And I'm sorry you're going through what you're going through. Dave is in the international line, Hamilton, Ontario, on Coast to Coast. Dave?
Oh, boy, that must be some kind of an omen there. I was just going to speak to you about a religious matter. Quick question. Have you ever heard of Bart Ehrman?
Sure.
Bestseller, Misquoting Jesus, the story of what changed the Bible and why?
I've actually had Bart on the air a couple of times. Yep.
Not on Coastal.
I can't remember if I've had him on so many different radio shows. I can't remember if it's been on Coast, but I think I did actually. He's sort of a well-known authority on Gnostic writings and a collection of non-canonical gospels and stuff. And yeah, I thought I did many years ago, but
I haven't seen him in the list of guests in the Coast website, so I've never heard of him on the show.
Well, you're ahead of me on that, but I've interviewed him several times because I really like his stuff. Yes.
Okay. All right, the meat of what I wanted to say to you was this stuff about what's happening. There seems to be a culmination of events that are taking place with the Obama being sworn in, the Middle East thing. I think they're trying to push us to what the Masons say, order from chaos.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
And I think they're trying to push us over the brink and that we create some kind of... they create some kind of chaos where something happens and the people riot, and then they can do their martial law kind of stuff. And I think it's really important that people realize that if we fall into that, we're falling into just what they want us to do.
Well, tell me what the difference is between your theory that that's what the Obama people are going to do and the theory that was around for years that that's what the Bush people were going to do. Why is it different?
I missed the question. Why would the Obama people do something different than the Bush people?
No, what's the difference between the people that said that the at any time you can expect this is what the Bush administration is going to do, but they never did, and your theory that the Obama administration is going to do that? What would be different about the Obama administration that they would want to do that?
Administration, if they bring up like he's not eligible to be the president because he's not an American citizen, and they bring it up, after the fact. I mean, this could cause kind of riots or something, right? Obviously.
I guess. I mean, I think they would handle it. I don't know why the riots would break out. Why would riots break out?
If there was a question whether he was legitimate to be the president, then people are going to, be up in arms thinking this is our, don't want to use the word savior, but, people will kind of think that for good reason. I think he's a good man. And if all of a sudden they wanted to take him out of office, you don't think that would create a riot?
Yeah, I guess I'm taking nothing away from your position in Canada as an observer of all things American. I guess I'm not. I mean, that story's already been pretty well vetted on whether or not he was an American citizen.
Yeah,
so I guess I don't see that one looming on the horizon. And that if it did come out, it would be handled like we do. It would be handled through the law. I mean, it might be laborious, it might be awful, but we'd have a way of handling that without. Without turning into weapons,
that would keep saner heads and not do anything. But there are the group that are a little bit more militant, and I'm going to say Alex Jones. I love the work he's done. He's exposed a lot of the corruption. A lot of the people I talk to in the politics, the political avenue, the media in Canada here. I talked to a political commentator tonight with a major media. He knew of Alex Jones, knew of Coast to Coast. And my thing is, I think the cat's out of the bag to where the Bilderbergers are afraid of us getting too much power and knowing too much information. So they're going to create this crisis so they can have their order. And if it does, it didn't work with the economic thing so far, collapse. And it probably, hopefully, won't work if there's any kind of problem with Obama. But they might, they're trying this maybe Palestine-Israel thing to create this World War III Armageddon.
I guess maybe I just have more faith in humanity that we'll be able to avoid that. Or should the crisis come up, we'll be able to handle it without having to go to the streets in mass rioting. But we'll keep an eye on it. And I'm sure, Dave, if that happens, you'll have a chance to call up and say, I told you so, next time we do open lines. Now, I want to get to Patrick before the top of the hour because he's floating off the coast of Georgia. Or are you on an island? Patrick, where are you?
Oh, the tugboat there, Mr. Ian. We out here. Oh, man, we love XM Radio, and we love coast to coast.
I love Savannah. I love living in Georgia, and I love that part of the country. It's just beautiful.
Well, we're just holding out here waiting for pilot there in the morning to take in another load of asphalt. I really enjoyed your guest tonight. It was a refresher. You know, when I was in high school, I did a report on a nuclear war, and I think it's been quite some time, and I think people just forget. But you were talking about how there hasn't been any movies with Nest or anything in it, and I believe that movie with The Patriot with Nicole Kidman and George Clooney, they were using the Nest people to find that nuclear weapon in downtown Manhattan.
I thought that was all, I mean, I'm with you, but I thought that was almost all military that they had on that. Because he remembered, I was thinking of that movie, actually, and the George Clooney character was military, and I guess she was a scientist. So maybe you could say that she was brought in as, like, part of the Nest team, like a Nest advisor. I hadn't thought of that, but... All right, well, very good. Thanks. And Patrick, remember, you're on the front lines there. You're on this, you're right there, floating off the coast. Should you see anything as a tugboat operator, Patrick, make sure you get that information to the authorities as quickly as possible. So, you know, I think it's a good reminder that we all need to be suspicious and that some of the best examples of terrorist activities that were thwarted were ones that were thwarted by common citizens who noticed something wrong, brought something to somebody else's attention. The more information we have as citizens about what the challenges are that we're facing, the more we're going to be able to do something about it and not to always think just leaving it up to the experts. So thank you, Patrick, for serving your country as a tugboat operator and everybody else out there. We'll get back to open lines coming up next, and we'll see where this show goes. You can pick up the conversation as it started or completely new direction coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.